So yesterday, my son was in a soccer game. My son is 4 years old, so soccer is a very generous term as far as what's happening on that field. And he scored a couple goals, and we were leaving the soccer field, and he looks at my wife and I, and he's like, can we go get a snow cone? Because for some reason, these people decide to bring a snow cone truck out to a children's soccer league because they hate parents. And we were like, no, we're not getting a snow cone. It's a little chilly. It's not snow cone weather. We're not doing this. And this kid, I swear, looks at me and is like, but I scored a lot of goals today. And I was like, there was never a conversion chart that we talked about in this. And so, like, I'm walking to the car, and then next thing I know, my wife was like, hey, so I talked with him. We're going to go get ice cream. And I was like, hold on, how are we getting ice cream? And she was like, well, we compromised. And I'm like, that's not what a compromise is. But it was this funny moment where, like, I realized, like, hey, we are trying to teach him, like, hey, what does it look like to be successful? How do you see rewards as a result of success? And, like, yeah, I do want to teach him that. That's a good lesson to learn. Especially because earlier in the week, we had to teach him a lesson about, like, hey, what does it mean to love and respect your classmates? Because, like, he got a timeout in preschool because he wasn't listening to the teacher and he wasn't being the best little friend that he could be. And I think it's this really cool conversation, though, of, like, as he's getting older, I'm seeing the joy of what it means to get to teach him lessons. And particularly as he gets even older than he is, because again, he's four, so everything's very black and white. But as he gets older and realizing, like, there's so much nuance in the world, that any sort of straight up lesson isn't going to be the easiest thing to convey. And, like, this is part of the reason why I'm really grateful that we're in a series on parables, because what I love that Jesus does with parables as we're going through the Gospels is that he demonstrates to people that when they're looking for crystal cut black and white answers in order to catch Jesus in some, like, web of words, he uses a story to convey the larger meaning that actually matters most. And this is why he exclusively taught in parables, because when he teaches in parables, you can't defend these stories, or you can't dismantle these stories, because stories at their heart help us see things in a way that straight up academic lessons won't. And so today, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be looking at another one of his parables, specifically on the topic of forgiveness. And it comes from the book of Matthew in the 18th chapter. And in Matthew 18, it says, then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times? And I'm going to pause there real quick because this is very important. Peter's brother was Saint Andrew, who was also one of the disciples. So, like, I like to imagine that Andrew was just super annoying to Peter, and Peter was like, Jesus, like, how many more times do I got to do this? And Jesus is like, I will turn this donkey around and we will go home if you two don't knock it out. But instead, Jesus answered, I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wants to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. At this time, the servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay back everything. The servant's master took pity on him and canceled the debt and let him go. So he doesn't just, like, say, all right, you have more time. He goes, we're square. But when the servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, be patient with me and I will pay it back. But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown in the prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged and went and told their master everything that had happened. And the master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said, I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother or your sister from your heart. So the context of this Jesus at this time was in Galilee. So when you see behind me, you see like this image of water with a bank, and you kind of see the drawing that we've made for this week's tapestry. And this is to represent that Jesus is in Galilee at this time. He's crossed over that sea, and he is teaching to people in this region. And Galilee is interesting in the sense that it has both Jewish and Gentile populations, because of that, they're very kind of like open to different perspectives of different religions. And Jesus is able to go a little bit harder in the way that he's teaching here because people are a little bit more receptive. And the other thing that Jesus is doing as he's going particularly firm in the way that he's teaching them is that he knows the end is coming to fruition very quickly. We're very much in kind of like the end of Act 2. When it comes to the gospel narrative. We've had Act 1, we've had Act 2. Once Jesus crosses back over and goes back to Judea, there's really no turning back, and he's going to be, all roads lead to Jerusalem, and Jerusalem leads to the cross, and Jesus knows this, and so he knows we're at like kind of some of the final moments that he can really give as much instruction as he can to all of his disciples and all of his followers. And so the story that he picks here is crucial because I really want you to pay attention to the numbers that he gives out. So he talks about 10,000 bags of gold. Another way that this could have been translated is 10,000 talents. A talent at that time was effectively a bag of a lot of gold. We believe it's somewhere between 70 to 80 pounds of pure gold, which in like modern sense would have been like $21.5 million for each bag of gold. And mind you, he had 10,000 bags of gold, which is roughly, if I do the math correct in my head, it was something like $21.6 billion that this guy had in debt, which is enough money, by the way, in modern sense, to make him the 93rd richest person in the world, richer than David Tepper, the hedge fund manager who bought the Carolina Panthers, all right? And so in that, when you look at the fact that this guy like squandered 10,000 talents or $21 billion, you do have to ask, what in the world were you doing with that money? But then again, David Tepper bought the Carolina Panthers. So people make poor choices with their money sometimes, right? And in that, this guy does all of this. This is how much that he has effectively taken from his master. And yet, he is forgiven that level of debt. He is forgiven a debt of $21 billion. And then he goes from there and chokes a guy for 100 silver coins. 100 silver coins likely probably meant 100 shekels. A shekel was each about $9, all right? Which means this guy owed him less than $1,000, and he choked the man over this. But the money here is not the important point. The money is here to demonstrate the disparity of the story. Which is when Peter is going to Jesus and he's asking Jesus about forgiveness, he's asking Jesus this concept of like, well, at what point do I stop having to care? At what point do I get to say I can stand on the principle of the matter? And Jesus is like, it doesn't work that way. And I'm going to give you a parable of the most insanely disproportionate amounts and help you realize what is actually happening here. Because if you believe that God has forgiven you of everything that we have been broken of in our lives, then surely we can find a reason to forgive people who have had minor squabbles with us. But where we get tripped up is we get into the like, no, but it's the principle of the matter. Like, I was right. And like, they need to be aware that I was right. And whenever I think about like that concept, like my mind always backs to when I was a waiter. So back in high school and in college, I waited tables at Red Robin's Gourmet Burgers. All right. And I know you've all been impressed by me before that, but it's even more impressive now, right? Red Robin's gourmet burgers, and again, they use the term gourmet loosely, was this like big part of who I was, because I loved waiting tables. I was good at waiting tables. And effectively, like waiting tables, you just talk to people and bring them, you know, sodas whenever they're asking for it. So like, I would just like sit there and I was talking to people, and I really enjoyed that work. And I remember specifically this one point, this guy called me over to his table and he said, "Hey, I asked for this burger to be cooked medium, and it was really cooked more like, you know, medium rare." And so like Gordon Ramsay over here in Red Robin is complaining about like the cook of this burger. And I looked at it and I said like, "Sir, that actually is medium, but I'm gonna go grab you one that's medium well so that it's right to your liking. We're gonna get that out for you right away." All right, so I go do that and I come back. He finishes the meal. I look at the tip. He does not tip me, and I can't understand why. I got him the burger that he wanted. And I remember this was early on, and I remember my trainer coming to me and was like, "Do you know what you did, right?" And I was like, "What?" And he was like, "You insulted him." I was like, "I didn't insult him. I was right. He was wrong." And he was like, "Yeah, how did that really work out for you? Why would you not just say, our mistake, let's get that fixed for you right away?" And I was like, "Because it's the principle. I want to be a good waiter. I want him to know that I did my job. I don't want him to think that I did it wrong." And he was like, "You are so caught up in the fact that you so deeply want to be right that you're sacrificing the thing that you're actually supposed to be caring about, which is the person who's been entrusted to you." And as silly and ridiculous of an example as that was, like, it is the most fundamental truth of, like, how often do I get caught up in the fact that I just want to deeply be right, that I'm willing to just burn and salt the earth behind me in order for somebody to know that I was right. And how many of the disputes that we get into in this world are the result of that? I heard a stat this week that 80% of disagreements and disputes in this world go unresolved, that we just bury them. And the problem is when we bury them, we don't actually get rid of them, we don't actually do anything, so we have to carry that for the rest of our lives. And sometimes they're minor. Like if you just swallow the fact that you're like, "I didn't mess up on like the cook or of a burger," and sometimes they're much more massive. We have these family friends, we're friends with the kids, we're friends with the parents, and it's this interesting story where like the kid and the parents haven't talked to each other in years over this like minor disagreement. Like the parent said something at one point where like it was this offhanded comment that was a little insulting, and the kids took it really, really, really personally, and they're both in this like standstill where they've been like, "Well, no, I'm mad at you for saying the comment. Well, I think you're overreacting to the comment." And now they've both just dug trenches that they're camping out in, and they're just unwilling to cross this middle line. And like to the extent where like now these grandkids are growing up without their grandparents for years. And both sides have told me like, "No, I'm good. I'm willing to move on. I'm willing to like go to my grave with this. Until they apologize, I am not going to move from my position." And when both sides have that, there's no resolution. Like this is probably what's going to happen for the rest of their lives, is they're just not going to engage with their parents over a trivial comment. And the funny thing is both sides have said, "Oh, I've made peace in my heart that I can just let go of that person for the rest of my life. It's no big deal. I can give up on them." And I'll go, "Really? Because you bring it up every time I'm around you." And they do too. "Are you guys really sure that you've really come to peace with this in your heart?" And the truth is, of course they haven't. Because their heart is swimming in the brokenness of this world. Their heart is swimming in the brokenness of relationship. Their heart is swimming in the fact that they are experiencing the pain that this world can throw at us in the worst possible ways by our own accord. Because they're both so unwilling to actually give away something that's free. They have attributed a value of something that is free. See, there's this mentality of a way to approach the world that you can either approach the world in a scarcity mindset or an abundance mindset. And a scarcity mindset means that when you look in the world and you see resources that exist, you believe that there is a limited amount of resources. And when there's a limited amount of resources, it is your job to go out and to scour the earth for as many of those resources as you possibly can, and then to hoard them, to build up walls around you, to hoard your resources, because if you let somebody into those walls, they could steal the resources that are finite and you need them. Therefore, you have to push everybody else away. And in an abundance mindset is this idea that the most precious resource that exists in this world is unlimited. And if the most precious resource that exists in this world is unlimited, then there is no need to build up walls. There is no need to push people out. There is no need for us to fight others off, because what is the worst case scenario? They take a resource that you can go get as much as you want of it at any given moment. And the issue that we get into is that, like, when we operate in this world does have finite resources. Like, there's no getting around that. Like, there's a finite amount of wealth. There's a finite amount of natural resources, etc. So, like, when I had to buy a house, like, it made sense for me to have to go take out a loan to buy that house because somebody is giving me part of their finite amount of resources. Sure. But our issue is that when we attribute our soul to the same manner that we attribute the rest of this world, which is that our soul doesn't run off of finite resources. Our soul runs off of the grace that God has given us. And so when I look at this, these stories of people who are unwilling to forgive, I realize the fact that, like, God has demonstrated to us this idea that forgiveness is unlimited. There is no need to operate in a scarcity mindset when it comes to the way that people have harmed us, because our willingness to forgive them does nothing from us. It takes nothing from us in order to forgive them. Therefore, we shouldn't require anything of them in order to do that. Especially when you consider the fact that we worship a God who has given us an infinite amount of grace to make up for the fact that we are sinful, that we are broken, that we hurt God, that we hurt others. And all of that debt, all of that is repaid and canceled and forgiven. And yet when somebody does something to us on this earth, we can't fathom the idea that maybe, just maybe, we have the ability to offer to them that same level of grace. But what we end up holding on to, what we end up carrying with us, is resentment. What we end up carrying with us is this broken, scarred fragment of our soul. Because we believe so deeply that we are owed something. This is the hardest part about being a Christian. See, the hardest part about being a Christian, we think, like, oh, it's like, you know, I've got to go to church, or I've got to be a good person, or I've got to tithe, or I've got to do this, I've got to do that. When in reality, all of the things that we think actually make being a faithful servant hard are actually just byproducts of what the hardest part of being a Christian is, which is truly reforging your soul through the grace of God. And crafting your soul in such a way that you find genuine relationship with God and genuine relationship with others, and you realize that the hardest parts of this world actually become easy. And the truth of the matter is, there's no shortcut to this. There is only one way to actually live this life, and it is to have a desire and a willingness and a plan by which our soul becomes restored and our relationship with God and our relationship with others are restored as a result. And Jesus does this, or Jesus makes this clear in the book of Luke. Where in the book of Luke, he says, large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and turning to him, he said, if anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? For if you lay the foundation and are not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule you, saying, this person began to build and wasn't able to finish. Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Won't he first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and ask for terms of peace. In the same way, those of you who do not give up everything you have cannot be my disciples. And the point of this being that if we're going to go down this route, we've got to be willing to do the work. And there's no scenario in which we can have the life in the kingdom of heaven that we so deeply desire if we are going to carry with us the resentment and the hurt and the burden that we still hold because of something somebody else did. And so the question is whether or not we are willing to do the part on our side of the equation. See, in Jewish culture, the highest day of in Jewish culture is known as Yom Kippur, which you've probably heard of Yom Kippur. It's a day of atonement. It's a day in which you get made right with God, where all the ways in which you have failed to follow God faithfully are made right, and you will receive forgiveness from God. It is the highest of holiest days in the Jewish tradition. And on the day before Yom Kippur, which is Erev Yom Kippur, that is where you are called to actually go out and to forgive everybody else who has wronged you in some way over the past year. And so when Peter is coming to Jesus and asking, you know, how often do I have to forgive my brother? You have to understand that the tradition of Yom Kippur had already existed for over 600 years. Which means for 600 years, generations of faithful Jewish men and women already understood that in order to receive forgiveness from God, they first had to forgive others. And yet, he still looks at Jesus and says, how often do I have to do this? And Jesus tells them, this is about your heart. This isn't about them. I was reminded of that this week because before St. Andrew disaffiliated from the United Methodist Church, and I had this moment with this person within the United Methodist leadership outside of St. Andrew, and the details of it are thoroughly not important, but you ought to understand that in my interaction with this person, I was insulted, I was belittled, I was threatened, and I was put down. All in one conversation over a disagreement. And the reality is I still hold that. I was talking to Arthur about it this week, and he was like, yeah, Jimmy, that's actually the whole point of this parable. Like, you've got to be willing to let that go. And make no mistake, what he did to you was wrong. The way he talked to you was wrong. He was a grade A jerk, and that is okay to name that. But you are carrying a resentment for a person who probably doesn't even think about it anymore. And you can forgive him and name that he was a jerk and name that he probably still is. And you can still let it go because what Christ has called you to do is Christ has called you not only to forgive him, but Christ has called you to be willing to lay down your life for him. Christ has called you to say, that person was a jerk and they hurt me and I forgive them and I would do anything for them because that is what it means to believe in the gospel. And he's right. I will probably never interact with him again, but why in the world am I still carrying it? Because at this point, the only person I'm carrying it for is me, and I don't want it anymore. And so the charge for myself and the charge for each of us is there is somebody in probably every single one of our lives that we can think that has done something to us that we are holding on to. And I want you to go to God in prayer this week, just as I'm going to be going to God in prayer this week, asking that God relieves us of it. helps us let go of it. Because in the kingdom of heaven, it has no wealth, it has no value. Meanwhile, the grace of God is abundant. And we can have that instead of this. Would you pray with me? Gracious and loving God, you came into this earth and you showed us a new way of living. You showed us what it meant to have a new heart. And so God, I ask that you come to this place today, that you make your spirit known to each and every one of us, and you pour out an extra helping, an extra offering of grace upon each one of our hearts, so God, that we might be strengthened to go and to let go of the pain, let go of the resentment and the burdens that we carry, knowing, God, that they have no value. Certainly not a value greater than the grace and the forgiveness that you have offered. So allow us, God, to forgive those around us so that we might truly embrace the thing that you have given to us, which is greater. It's in your holy name we pray. Amen.